This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
What happened?
Listen to me. I did the best I could, and I do not want to talk about this anymore.
The best you could? You're not some first-year associate. You're a goddamn named partner who bullied his way onto my case. And the next thing I know, you've laid down like a dog, let yourself get...
You weren't there! You weren't there! You don't know the shit I went through. You never will. Now back the hell off and get the hell out of my office.
Lewis, relax. I was just trying to...
Get the hell out!
Suits Season 8, Episode 4 is over. If you're ready to hear us talk about revenue per square foot, then Suits yourself. I'm Rob Sestrino, back here with the guy who, no matter what Harvey says, is not going to watch a Star Trek episode. It's Chappelle.
That part. But I'm not watching Cagney and Lacey either.
Yeah.
I don't like Magnum P.I. I've seen it. And I do not care about MASH. I felt personally attacked by this entire episode.
Yeah, the TV references are, you know, like, they're not watching a lot of modern shows.
No, maybe that's
they're
why.
Busy.
Mike Ross got busy with the clinic and went to jail, and we lost all our TV references, and now he's going off the show. And we're trying to bring him back through Dulé, but Dulé hasn't seen a show since Married with Children premiered. And so, here we are talking about the Kobayashi Maru again.
Again.
And
again.
I'd be lying if I said I remembered what it was, but mm-hmm. I think I kind of figured out the gist of it based on this episode.
Yeah, it's the no-win situation. Actually, not really from Star Trek, the TV show, from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the movie. But that's for later on in the podcast. We can talk about all that here on revenue per square foot. Kind of a bad name for this episode.
Yeah, they didn't try.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't try at all. I mean, it does serve two purposes. It is the task that Donna was sent on to appease Robert Zane, who feels like he's losing control of his company. Feel like he never really had control of his company, but he's surrounded by people who are just insubordinate. So he told her to go.
It's giving substitute teacher vibes of Robert Zane is here, like, all right, class, he's writing his name on the chalkboard. I'm Mr. Zane, and everyone's like,
and we're throwing paper balls.
We're still gonna do what we want.
We're throwing paper balls at them.
You'll find out how it works around here soon enough, Mr. Zane.
Exactly. We do what we want. Whatever. I do what I want. And so, it is the task that Donna was given, but it's also the task that Donna does behind everybody's back. All of her, you know, reading people and getting in everybody's business and telling them what they really should be doing and what they should be thinking. It's her way of, you know, doing just that, which is determining, you know, how much revenue they make per square foot by keeping everybody together. That's what Donna tells Robert Zane. And she's like, that's my contribution to the company. I don't want to be doing reports. I'm the COO, but I'm much more than that. I'm Donna, and I get to do whatever I want.
Okay. This episode has a very dramatic opening where we start off with, Robert Zane is going to meet up with Lewis, and Lewis has a rendezvous with Sheila, who is fertile, as they are working towards making a little lit, and he's delayed, calls Robert Zane, and I did notice, like, boy, Lewis seems to be in a pretty, like, a not so great part of Toronto, York right now.
Yeah, where was he going? Because he's walking through a seedy part of the town and not, you know, like his seed, you know, as it was alluded to earlier, his Johnny Appleseed, I believe Sheila called it. But yeah, he gets caught up, and very quickly a man is holding him at gunpoint to get his wallet and his phone. Lewis did something very interesting in this moment. He gives up the wallet and says there's $1,000 in there, but I really need to keep my phone. Like, Lewis, I can tell you've never been here before. If you want to save your life, give the people what they want and then pray. You know, that's it. There's no bargaining with the mugger.
Yeah, he says that I have photos I haven't uploaded yet, and I wasn't sure it was like if he was being for serious or not. Also, like Lewis, like the mugger leaves like Lewis's like watch, like a nice watch, like very much like in frame. Did not seem to be interested in that, but a very dramatic moment certainly for Lewis, and one that leaves him like very shaken up. Chappelle, have you ever watched 6 Feet Under?
No, but I've heard good things. What happened?
No, it's a you know, a classic show, and also I won't spoil that show, but there is a like late stage 6 Feet Under. There's also a big storyline about one of the characters goes through like a traumatic event like this, which is like seemingly just like out of nowhere. It was just like this is like something that happens in life. Just randomly, like, you know, a really terrible thing could just happen to you.
Yeah, it happens. I think that people deal with this kind of stuff differently at different points in their lives. And I think for Lewis, this is going to be a defining moment for him probably moving forward. I'm sure we'll hear more about it because he felt like his dignity was taken. Now, Rob, I have been mugged. Twice, actually. Mm-hmm. It wasn't me. The first time I was standing next to a person getting mugged at gunpoint. I was in high school, and one of my dear friends, and I say dear friends, I do not know this man in real life anymore, but we were in high school, whatever we were called. So we used to ride the city bus. A car pulled up, and they rolled down the window and just held a gun out the window and said, "Give me your shoes." And I thought they were talking about me, in which case I was untying my shoes. Here you go. Whatever. But no, they were talking about the guy with the nice shoes next to me. And he had to walk home barefoot. We got on the city bus, got to our stop, and then started walking, and they took his shoes. Yeah. And he cried the whole way home. I did not tell my mom because then she wouldn't let me.
Walking on the street, and then a car rolled up.
We were standing at the bus stop.
Okay.
Waiting on the city bus, and he rolled down the window and said, "Give me your shoes." And he held out a gun.
Yeah.
And I really thought he was talking about me, but I'm thinking my shoes are garbage right now. Like, I'm not drippy. Mm-hmm. But my friend, he just got some new Jordans. Yeah. We ended up on the city bus. He cried the whole way home. It's tough. And I don't think I ever thought about like how that affected him. Because for me, I always tell it like almost like a light story. Like, ooh, that was close. But for him, I'm pretty sure it stuck with him for a long time. But he was just a kid. So to see Lewis going through this as an adult, I can imagine it makes you feel a little bit powerless. You know, we were also in a neighborhood where that could happen. It was like a non-zero chance that could happen. Whereas I'm pretty sure that Lewis being almost or somewhere around in his 40s at this point in a city that he knows very well, probably thought it wasn't a possibility. And so it's a shock to his system for sure. And like I said, he's probably going to need therapy we'll hear about this later on.
I felt like this episode was conspicuously missing Dr. Lipschitz, who I felt like probably could have helped Lewis a great deal like at this hour. Instead, we were wondering, where's Gretchen? She is here. But Lewis, I think, has like, again, I don't want to say it was an odd or unusual reaction, because I think that everybody is going to handle something like this very different. But he doesn't want to tell anybody except for Gretchen.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't even really want to tell Gretchen, but she kind of catches him red-handed, you know, in the office, licking his wounds, and she helps put him back together. But he doesn't want to tell anybody because he feels like his dignity has been taken, that he's going to appear weak to Robert Zane, someone who he really wants to take seriously. He knows he's third on the pecking order of the name partners. We all know Harvey can fight. So, and you know, Robert Zane seems like a pretty tough guy himself, and so Lewis just wants to be taken seriously, and he feels like that would be difficult if he comes out and says, "Yeah, I can't even protect myself to make it to work on time, you know, or to meet with the clients." He doesn't want to look bad. And so he decided to keep this to himself. Now, I'm with you. This is an interesting choice, but, you know, it's for Lewis to process however he feels. But it's really bad for him to keep this to himself. Eventually, he lands on letting Harvey tell Robert Zane. But I really don't think that would have been an issue if he let Gretchen do it. You know, if Gretchen had just said, "You know what, Lewis? This is affecting your work. People are starting not to trust you. You're actually pissing off the managing partner, and you're losing court cases because of it. Let me step in." I wouldn't have been mad at Gretchen, and I don't think Lewis would have been either.
Yeah, and so Lewis is dealing with this throughout the episode, and he has to like make excuses and sort of like try to cover up what's going on, to the point where Robert Zane is pissed. He ends up giving one of Lewis's clients to Samantha Wheeler, and then Lewis ends up working with her on this, and they end up in court together. And there's a scene where we've seen, like, honestly, Lewis should never go to court. No. Every single time we've seen Lewis actually like in court, like I kind of feel like things have gone bad. Like we've been very few times over the course of the series, and almost always it goes poorly.
Yeah, anytime we have to follow Lewis to court, if we find out Lewis is going to be the one putting someone on the stand, we should know there's some fireworks coming. We've seen him have a heart attack. We've seen him have PTSD. We've
lash seen him out blow at people. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's not great for Lewis when he gets on a stand. And this time, he's having vivid images of the prosecution, or I'm sorry, yeah, the plaintiff, his representation, pointing a gun at him, even though it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very symbolic of a lot of the things we talk about on Suits, even when you talk about the Kobayashi Maru. The analogy or whatever that Harvey always uses is if someone has a gun pointed at you, there's a thousand things that you can do to get out of the situation, you know, figure it out. And for Lewis, there was no way out of the situation. It was give up what you have and hope for the best. And I think for when you have that narrative in the air where it's always something you could do, there's always a way to break the system. There's always you could reprogram the simulation or whatever. Lewis found himself in a situation where he couldn't do any of that. And so, yeah, I think that it was probably like a bigger, you know, storyline for Lewis to say, dang, I actually was powerless in a world where a lot of these attorneys are willing to go above and beyond, break the rules, bend the rules and all kinds of stuff to make things happen. There was nothing he could have done. He was going to get mugged and there was nothing he could do about it.
Yeah. And so that this fallout from the courtroom ends up where Samantha Wheeler like knows something that's going on. He like lashes out at her. Is it Donna
that
tells Harvey go check in on Lewis?
Samantha. Samantha's the one, yeah. Because she, I mean, Lewis is a person who lashes out, but Lewis and Samantha have had two interactions. The first one where she kind of used her womanly wiles to, you know, disarm him or whatever you want to call that. And then the second time where Lewis comes to her and strong arms his way into this case, but she's very impressed with his ability to do that. She said, you're kind of a badass. The next time she sees him, he screwed up this case. We know that he's missed his appointment with Robert Zane's client. And now all of a sudden he's shouting at her and not even willing to talk about what went wrong. So she could tell that something was up and she told Harvey, Lewis needs a friend and he needs that friend to be you and he needs it right now.
Yeah. So Harvey tries to take Lewis to dinner and he's like, no, I don't want to. He's like, what? Lewis, come on.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to dinner?
He says, you always want to go to dinner with me. He says, well, I have Sheila now, so let's move on. But eventually Harvey starts to poke at him and Lewis does reveal what happened, which is that he got mugged. And of course, Harvey, like any other normal human being, says, Lewis, that's perfectly okay for you to be upset and to not know how to deal with that and to tell Robert Zane, it will be fine. You will be fine. Just, you have to be able to say those things. But Lewis cannot bring himself to tell Robert Zane, so Harvey volunteers to do it for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Robert Zane ends up being super understanding. He ends up telling the story about how when he was 14 years old, that he was on the other end of it. And has like had trouble living with that, and so he tells that someday that guy that was the mugger, he's gonna be on the other side of it, or he's gonna like, you know, have to live with who he is and the things that he did, and so Lewis feels like at least better that Robert Zane is understanding.
Yes, but I have two questions for you. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Does this come up as another storyline for Lewis, like his PTSD with this moment?
I think so, because like, why do we introduce this here if not to like have it be like something else that he's dealing with?
So I thought that about the health crisis as well when he had his heart attack. Remember, I think we speculated back then, like, oh, is Lewis going to be on a hope? And they kind of did it for like an episode, was like, oh, I got to watch how I'm eating. Or he was kind of concerned about Harvey's health, but we never really got a resolution on that. So that's why I asked. The second thing I want to know is, do you think we see the mugger again?
I don't think so, but that would be interesting if he comes up like in one of the cases that we're dealing with.
Yeah, I feel like for Lewis, by the end of the episode, he's getting self-defense from like instruction from Samantha. And I feel like giving him self-defense lessons or whatever, but never giving him the opportunity to confront the person who did this to him, not even physically, just to like mentally have that moment of closure and to get his dignity back. I feel like that's something that the show really could use to move Lewis's storyline ahead. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw this guy again.
The self-defense lessons on the street was so wild to me.
It was like,
can you two go inside and work on this? Like, what are we doing?
Change into some clothes, you know, maybe bring your like some sweatpants and some workout clothes. Meet at the gym that we know
somebody's
going to
call the police. Like, there's either there's a woman kicking a man's ass here on the street, or there's a man wrestling with a woman on my street. Get down here.
Yeah. Some lady from Seattle Grace is beating up one of New York's top lawyers in the street. Yeah, that. I think Samantha has a flair for dramatics, and she wanted to spook Lewis a little bit. She showed up and looked like a dark, shadowy figure moving toward him, and she could tell that Lewis was shaken by that, and she wanted to use that as a way to say, look, Lewis, you felt that way because you were not properly trained in self-defense. If I can start to train you, then you will feel a lot better. Now, we know that Lewis is a enthusiast of the gun range, but we don't know if he's a, you know, a carrier, so I don't think the show is going to address that. But I do think that the show could give him the opportunity to maybe fight his way into, you know, feeling better about himself, give some self-esteem back.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the laws for like New York State. I think like it's definitely different in New York than it is like in my current state. But I don't know if you're allowed to have like a concealed weapon on you in New York State.
Well, yeah, because I can only speak for my state and... concealed? Really? I don't even know if it has to be concealed.
Honestly, I don't know. Like, yeah, I think that, because I go to the supermarket here in North Carolina. I've seen people like just walking around with like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Guns, knives, you know, you name it, you know, and here in Texas, same. And so, hopefully maybe, you know, the laws might not allow that in New York, but again, Lewis will have other opportunities to prove his manhood to himself because again, no one is judging Lewis for this except for Lewis.
I do think that that's interesting that, you know, that there's been a lot of like, you know, gun wielding by Lewis in the past. Like, it's interesting that, you know, he's, you know, has like now that he has had the gun pointed at him, he has a lot of issues around the gun.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it $150. I thought, the mugger, I thought Lewis was about to lay into him. Again, I'm used to a different environment here in Texas. So if a mugger comes up to you and I know you're a gun holder, I'm thinking we about to have a confrontation on our hands. But Lewis folded so quickly that I figured, okay, he's probably not carrying a gun. Obviously, a lot of people just like the gun range because it's cathartic. You know, it's something you could go do and kind of release some steam. Everybody is not required to carry a gun just because you can shoot a gun. But like I said, if this is a show in a different atmosphere, Lewis pulls a gun back and then we got some fireworks. And like I said, depending on what the laws are, I can potentially see it. But I think the show is really leaning into self-defense as a physical form of, conflict resolution as opposed to the other, which is, you know, busting a cap.
Yeah. It does seem as though with a license, you can have concealed carry here in New York. Not sure about Toronto, York.
Yeah. And I don't know. The Canadians are probably a little bit stricter on the gun stuff than we are here in Toronto, Texas. So, you know.
Yeah. Something with a license. Very important.
But I'm not going to lie. I did think. I was like, oh, he ran up on the wrong one because Lewis about to do, he got that thing on him. But, maybe not.
All right, let's talk about the Alex Williams of it all, where Alex Williams, that he's annoyed still about the Samantha Wheeler promise that was made. He talks to Harvey about it. And Harvey is going to try to like, okay, let's go out there. Let's get some new business. Come on, me and you. Let's go out there. Be my new Mike Ross.
I'm starting to feel bad for Alex Williams in this episode. I think he gains a little bit more of my respect by the end of it. But initially, I'm like, Alex, stand up, man. They out here jerking you around. Harvey has screwed you over several times since the day we saw you, honestly. The first time we were introduced to Alex, it was a story about how Harvey was not holding up his end of the bargain. And so here, Alex is faced with that same thing. Again, Harvey is not holding up his end of the bargain. He's not willing to fight for him. And so he said, Alex, let's go get a client together that that Robert Zane would like. You know, why don't you just sit tight and have faith? And I'm thinking, Alex, come on, man. Alex, Alex, come on, man. Alex literally says, Harvey, would you sit tight and have faith? And Harvey's like, yeah, I would do that. I would definitely wait until it's my turn to be a partner. What are you talking about? To be named partner. I'm like, Harvey, you lying hypocrite. You are such a liar. I remember so vividly that episode where Harvey throws a whole fit, goes to Alex for a new job.
Just because Jessica, yeah.
Yeah, just because Jessica wouldn't make him a partner that day. And so here, it's rich for Harvey to be sitting up on his high horse being like, Alex, come on, baby, it's me. I got you.
Yeah. Stop it. Alex is kind of gets taken for a sucker like almost all the time.
Every day. All day, every day.
Every day.
And it sucks. You know, because even the client that they bring him in, I think it's Paxson Bioscience, this client comes to them and says, I want y'all to do some illegal stuff. But of course, I'm not going to ask you to do some illegal stuff. But if illegal stuff happens, you know, y'all going to make a lot of money. So let's see what we can do here. And I'm thinking, even the case that you bring, Alex, is shady. Robert Zane might just be okay. I mean, not be okay with this case in general, but they try to lock it down. It seems like at first, Alex is kind of like, I don't know about this one. But because they're paying the big bucks, he's willing to do it. I think they want to pressure one of their clients, one of Zane Spector Litt's clients, to cut off the legs of this other company. And it's crossing a line, but it's worth it if they get paid.
Mm-hmm. And so Harvey and Alex are going to like work to, they're not going to do exactly what they want. They're going to try to go after the ultimate client. They're going to take that information and go after Crytogen, which I think is the bigger client. But ultimately, like we get this story of the Kobayashi Maru because Robert Zane is pissed at what these guys are doing.
Yeah, and it's tough because Robert Zane is like, no, drop what you're doing, pick up Paxson. Let's just do the normal thing that we were asked to do and move on. Alex is like, Paxson is on some criminal stuff too. And Robert says, I don't care. I just don't want you doing this extra stuff because you're acting in bad faith. And it's a bad look. People are going to talk about us and know that we take information that's privileged and use it to gain other clients and to ruin other people's businesses. So we're not doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, Robert Zane is saying, drop everything, do what I say. On the other hand, Harvey's saying, you're not going to turn your back on me for Robert Zane. I'm the one fighting for you to get your name on the wall. And I was just like, bro, both of y'all suck. Y'all are using me in the middle of this to fight against each other. He doesn't want to ruin the chain of command. He doesn't want to piss off Robert Zane, who he needs to impress. He needs these votes. His head is spinning and he doesn't know what to do. And so Donna shows up with the Star Trek reference.
And Robert Zane, maybe this is not like the kind of stuff you did over at Rand Kaldor Zane, but this is another day at the office here at Spector Lit.
Normal stuff. This is run of the mill. I was like, this ain't even that stressful. Well, you know, I'm kind of like Donna. Okay, it's just the Kobayashi Maru. Like, haven't you seen it? Easy peasy. Yeah.
So we've find out that by way of Donna that Alex Williams is talking with Holly Cromwell. I think I might be at first like, wait, he's talking to her about what?
Right.
What's going on? What's Listen, the tea, Donna?
She's a trustworthy lady. She has a legitimate business.
She's
now.
A headhunter.
She is. And not in the same way she used to be, though. You know, no. She had to kind of go clean because Zane Spector Litt took all the magic out of the game for her. Now she's just in it for the money. Mm-hmm. Sad story.
Yeah. And so that he's out there trying to go and look for a job. We find out later that actually he didn't call her. She called him.
Yeah, and I thought this is fairly obvious. Like, I thought Donna's whole setup with Alex was basically pretty textbook Donna. She comes to Alex and says, hey, it's the Kobayashi Maru. You got something that you need to handle, but you need to find another way around this no-win situation. And so if you cannot find it, maybe you need to find a different job. And I thought that was Donna being like, hey, entertain some other options so you know what your worth is. And that's exactly what he does. He goes to 14 other firms and like, hey, can I be named partner soon? Everybody's like, no, are you crazy? Mm-hmm. And so number 15 is Zane Spector Litt. So he knows jumping ship is not an option, but having that Holly Cromwell calling, knowing that Alex is looking for a job, will definitely spark a fire under Harvey's ass a little bit if he doesn't want his friend to leave. Robert Zane probably could care less, but Harvey is going to, you know, be very intent on keeping Alex around. So I thought it was a good move from Donna.
Yeah. And then ultimately, Alex Williams ends up going to Harvey and Robert Zane and saying that he figured out a third thing, which I guess ultimately is a solve for this Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, the client wanted to basically lock one of their employees into a lifetime of servitude is what they called it. And so because of that, Alex went and told him. He's like, hey, maybe you should explore your other options. And he did. And so with him leaving, it handcuffs both of the like Paxton and Krytogen to where they cannot utilize that guy for their bidding. And it signed that guy as the new client, and he, you know, brought in the big bucks. And so Robert Zane could quibble. He could be upset because Alex didn't follow his direct order, but he did make the money. And Alex makes a point of saying, this is not about me. This is about you and Harvey having a pissing match with me in the middle, and I'm not about to be a part of it. So y'all figure it out. Figure out your shit and leave me alone.
All right. Let's then get into like the other part of the Donna story. Talked about it in a few different ways, that the intersection, but really the biggest thing I think ultimately ends up being that Donna and Robert Zane sort of butt heads a little bit, and Donna is giving advice to Robert Zane which he does not appreciate, that she's also giving out pro bonos. He's like, wait a second, why is our chief operating officer giving out pro bono cases?
Right. She's like, wait, I can't do that. It's like, Donna, do you actually know what a COO does? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, like, you don't get to be a lawyer as well. She's like, but I'm Donna. And that's the awesome argument that she uses. And that's the argument that everybody uses, though, Harvey. I mean, Rob, it's like Harvey says the same thing. Blah. He says, oh, I'm Harvey. I can just do these things because I like to win. And then you have Alex Williams and Samantha just like, I do
these things.
I do these things. Yes.
Aren't you often, when people ask you, like, wait, hold on, why are you doing that? Aren't you, like, hey, I'm Chappelle.
I don't know if I ever say that. I think people say that about me. They're like, oh, that's Chappelle. They assume that's my stance. But really, what I'm waiting for is somebody like Robert Zane to say, do not do that. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, if you shut me down, I will stop. But I think that's the difference between me and the people at Zane Spector Lit. They do not take direction well at all. Donna does what she wants. Harvey does what she wants. Lewis does what he wants. Like, everybody's just running around in circles doing whatever the hell they want. And Robert Zane is sick of it. He's like, I can't even get Lewis to show up to a meeting with the client because he out here tapping his girlfriend, as he says. And so, yeah, I need to put my foot down. He tells Donna to go run this report. Donna eventually does the report after handling the things with Alex, handling the things with Harvey. She shows up to Robert Zane like, hey, I did your little report or whatever. And this is very much my energy. Like, here, damn, you got it. Now, let me tell you why you let me do the things that I do, because I'm good at what I do. And you could get anybody to do that other stuff that you want, but you can only get me to do what I be doing. So, yeah, Donna is Chappelle. Shout out to Chappelle.
Yep. Woo!
Chappelle and for the Liddy.
Donna basically tells Robert Zane, hey, let me cook.
Let me, Rob, that's all I'm saying. Robert Zane Sesternino, just let me have a ball, baby. I got this, you know? But yeah, she makes a good point. She tells Robert Zane, look, there's a reason why Grand and Caldor flipped on you. We never talk about why they left him out to dry. They were like, you like Pearson Spector Lid so damn much that we leaving you behind. It's like, is that all it takes? Robert Zane to go out on a limb for another company twice and y'all jump ship? But no, it's because Robert Zane's not kind to the people around him. He's like, I rule with an iron fist. You do what I have to say or else. And they're like, you showing all this love to Pearson Spector Lid? You don't even show us that kind of love. So here we are now where you're at Zane Spector Lit, and you're still not showing love. And these people are going to push back against you because this company was here way before you, and they're going to deal with things the way they've been dealing with things until you can meet them halfway and help them do things your way, you know? Donna says, let me cook. Stop smacking us around all the time, and we got your back. We'll follow your orders, you know, but you got to give us some wiggle room. And I think it works out.
And Robert Zane can't believe that he's letting Donna do the whisper-ish to him.
But I mean, you can't stop it. People like me, Donna, it's just what we do. We whisper. We a lot.
Let's give out a Liddy here for season 8, episode 4.
I mean, at this point.
Yeah?
It's gotta be Donna. Donna, I mean, look at the...
Did she go back to back? Did she get one yesterday too?
I think so. And you know what? She probably needs to get more Liddies because this company really needs a Donna right now, right? Because they're not communicating. Robert Zane is getting upset and just flying off the handle. Harvey does not respond to that kind of thing. The only person who knows how to get through the Harvey all the time is Donna. The only person who knows how to get through the Lewis all the time is Donna. Mm-hmm. You know, to be frank, she's probably the most important person in the show right now just to keeping the company together, which is why this revenue per square foot report is BS, because the things that she does that's intangible is really the thing that is keeping the place afloat. The guy who has the kid, Lewis's friend, the one who he refuses to fire, you know, that guy.
Brian.
I will never remember his name. Mm-hmm. Donna is like Brian times 1,000. Brian is the person they sit him in the middle of the room and all the other associates come to him. Donna's the same exact way. Everybody's coming through Donna and things don't happen if Donna's not in the room. Donna deserves the Liddy. And, I think by proxy, that means I deserve the Liddy.
Okay, Chappelle, honorary Liddy for Chappelle.
Yes, about time.
I mean, you deserve the Liddy in like, what is this, episode 112? I think you probably deserve about 100.
Okay, yeah. I have to review the tape on the Mother 12, but I trust you.
Yeah. All right, so this was a very heavy episode, a reference episode. We heard about Elmer Fudd. We heard about Star Trek, Magnum P.I., Cagney and Lacey, even Johnny Appleseed, John Henry, and Paul Bunyan.
But in what context, right? So Johnny Appleseed, John Henry, Paul Bunyan, and Elmer Fudd were all in the same. Mm-hmm. That was like some kinky stuff, right?
Yep. Foreplay, I believe they call it.
Yeah. I mean, it was wabbit season. Mm-hmm. Sheila was hunting wabbits.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, things were getting pretty intimate for Sheila and Lewis. I was uncomfortable.
Just a pinch, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like, I am going to keep my inappropriate joke to myself this time.
Okay.
But just know, I was like, Sheila, ma'am. Okay. She's got things going. They pulled the goalie a long time ago, and she is doing some. She is ready. She is just primed and ready.
All right. Mm-hmm. Then Chappelle, let's take some feedback here about this episode. Ooh. Okay, Patty, our senior partner, wrote in to say revenue per square foot had the most occurrences of goddams at 11, bullshits at 12 for the season. Huge episode for the goddamn and bullshit.
I think there was a lot of goddamn bullshit going on. You know, Robert Zane was up to his ears in it, and Lewis was dealing with a lot of it too. Mm-hmm. And then even Alex, at some point, Alex got to put his foot down. I would say this about Dulé Hill. He pouts really well. Like his like level of disdain that he has for this whole situation, that's kind of resting Dulé Hill in my mind. Cause you've never seen Psych, but he's like that the entire time. He has a partner named Sean who is always doing some very wacky shenanigans. You want to talk about the Chappelle type? Mm-hmm. Look no further than Sean. And so Dulé Hill's character is always like, Sean, you know you're not supposed to do that. Sean, it's horrible. Sean, what are you doing? Sean. Same energy this whole time. This was the crossover episode we needed.
Okay. Chappelle, then David wrote back in to say, did I jinx Lewis? I think I wrote into the last episode to say how Lewis is doing so well. And now a mugging may have ruined that. This is terrible. But seriously, did you see that coming? Maybe things were going too well for Lewis. What did you think of the acting throughout? I thought it was very well done.
I thought so too. I think anytime Lewis turns up is like my favorite Lewis. And so when he's having his struggles with the moment, I'm kind of like, come on, Lewis, get it together. But when, and that might just be my jaded background as well, where I'm like, it's fine. You live. Let's fight another day. But when Lewis gets upset with Samantha and he's yelling at her to get the hell out of his office, I'm like, yeah, this is the Lewis we signed up for. You know, he's awful. Yeah. But also, it's coming from a place of hurt, not a place of, you know, like trying to do harm to others. And so I like that a lot.
Well, you know how I feel about Rick Hoffman and his performance as Louis Litt. I think he's such a powerful actor that when he wants to go there, like, I think that he is like incredibly like powerful, and you believe that he is hurt, and he does such a great job anytime he has to go there for the story purposes.
Oh, I big agree. I agree, agree, agree. Like, poor Izzy Stevens, she looked legitimately concerned and afraid at the same time. But she also looked like, I take self-defense, Lewis, I'll beat your ass. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very much a good moment for both of
them. But, like, he'll have, like, veins throbbing. He'll be spitting when he's yelling. Like, I mean, he does an incredible job anytime he wants to go there, to the point where, like, throughout the show, the run of the show, there's times where he like blows up like super hard over things that it's not even called for. And I think that, you know, it speaks to the character, but, you know, he's so good at it.
Yeah. Super Saiyan Lewis every time. Love it.
Okay. Then from yesterday, Ash Pereira wrote in to say, how would T-Bird have reacted knowing that Delta was dropped by Zane Spector Litt for a lower league airline? Starboard Airlines.
You do a good T-Bird impersonation. Why don't you let me, let's hear one.
Rob, did you hear about on Suits that they mentioned Delta, but then they didn't take him? Rob, I don't understand why. Like, I don't know, T-Bird. It was just on the show. I don't know. It was just like, but what do you think? Like,
love it. Yeah, shout out to T-Bird, wherever she is. We should get T-Bird on the podcast. Yeah.
I had a connection through Atlanta on Delta the other day. I thought I would run into her, but she wasn't working, sadly. All right.
Rob, that would have made her day. That would have made my day. Yeah, that would have been amazing.
All right. Chappelle, anything else about this episode?
No, it's a good episode. I'm not mad at season 8 so far. You know, like
you like the reboot.
I do. I'm not angry at it. I just want to know the direction we're going here, because it still feels like Zane Spector Litt is cutting its teeth. You know, it's really still trying. It's going through the growing pains portion of the show, where it's when we met Pearson Hardman, it was a fully formed law firm, right? And so I just want to know kind of, okay, we got a season, maybe a season and a half or so left. Where are we going? What are we doing? What is the story here?
Yeah, what's the story we're trying to tell? All right. Yeah. Well, Chappelle, we will find out when we are back tomorrow to talk about season 8, episode 5. Thank you all so much for listening. You can find everything that I'm doing when you follow me on the Twitter @RobSesternino. We will be back tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.